And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting, rainy and cold El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's December 31st, 365th day of the year. It's actually known by a number of different names, including St. Sylvester's Day, New Year's Eve, Old Year's Day night, because tomorrow's New Year's Day. It's the last day of the fourth and final quarter of the year. And a lot of folks are going to be happy to see this year in their rearview mirror. On this day in 406, Vandals, Valens, and Suebians crossed the Rhine. It begins an invasion of Gaul. Now, for those who are not really familiar with what Gaul is, it's a region of Western Europe first described by the Romans, inhabited by the Celts and the Aquitani tribes. Encompasses present-day France, Luxembourg, Belgium, most of Switzerland, parts of northern Italy, the Netherlands, and Germany, particularly the west bank of the Rhine. It covered an area of about 191,000 square miles. According to Julius Caesar, Gaul is actually divided into three parts: Gallia Celticia, Belgica, Aquitania. Archaeologically, the Gauls were bearers of the Latini culture, which extended across all of Gaul, as well as east to Raetia, Noricum, Pannonia, and southwestern Germania during the 5th to the 1st centuries B.C. It's one of those areas that switch back and forth. 535, Byzantine general Belisarius completes the conquest of Sicily, defeats the Gothic garrison of Palermo, and ends his consulship for the year. In 870, Battle of Englefield, the Vikings clash with Ealdorman Ethelwulf of Berkshire. The invaders are driven back to Reading, East Anglia. A lot of the Danes are killed. 1105, Holy Roman Emperor Henry IV is forced to abdicate in favor of his son, Henry V, in Ingelheim. 1225, the Lee Dynasty of Vietnam ends after 216 years. It's ended by the enthronement of the boy emperor, Tran Thai Tong, husband of the last Lee monarch, Lee Chu Hoang, starting the Tran Dynasty. I mean, it's not enough he became an emperor, he was also a husband before he ever got out of wearing short pants. 1229, James I, the Conqueror, King of Aragon, enters Medina Mallorca, now known as Palma in Spain, thus consummating the Christian reconquest of the island of Mallorca. 1501, the First Battle of Cananore commences, seeing the first use of the naval line of battle. 1600, British East India Company is chartered and set out to conquer the world. 1660, James II of England is named Duke of Normandy by Louis XIV of France. 1670, the expedition of John Narborough leaves Coral Bay, having surveyed the coast and lost 4 hostages to the Spanish. 1687, the last Huguenot set sail from France to the Cape of Good Hope. 1757, Empress Elizabeth I of Russia issues her ukase incorporating Königsberg into Russia. 1759, Arthur Guinness signs a 9,000-year lease at £45 per year and starts brewing Guinness. 1775, a 9,000-year lease. That's interesting. And only £45 per year. 1775, American Revolutionary War, Battle of Quebec. British forces repulse an attack by Continental Army General Richard Montgomery. 1790, Ephemeris, the oldest Greek newspaper of which issues have survived till today, is published for the first time. 1796, the incorporation of Baltimore as a city took place on this date. 1831, Gramercy Park is deeded to New York City. 1853, a dinner party is held inside a life-size model of a iguanodon created by Benjamin Waterhouse Hawkins and Sir Richard Owen in South London, England. 1857, Queen Victoria chooses Ottawa, then a small logging town, as the capital of the province of Canada. He's probably the only one she could spell. 1862, American Civil War. Abraham Lincoln signs an act that admits West Virginia to the Union, which officially divides the state of Virginia into two parts. West Virginia and Virginia. 1862, American Civil War. Battle of Stones River began near Murfreesboro, Tennessee. I've wandered the battlefield of Stones River many times. In fact, there was a train wreck along the right-of-way, and when they were getting some of the cars up, they accidentally dug into a Civil War cemetery. Pulled out quite a number of bodies. Nobody knew they were there. 1878, Carl Benz, working in Mannheim, Germany, files for a patent on his first reliable two-stroke engine. Granted that patent in 1879. 1879, Thomas Edison demonstrates incandescent lighting to the public for the first time in Menlo Park in New Jersey. 1906, Muzaffar al-Din Shah Qajar signs the Persian Constitution of 1906. Only took him a day and a half to sign his name. 1907, the first New Year's Eve celebrations held in Times Square, which was then known as Longacre Square in Manhattan. 1942, USS Essex, the first aircraft carrier of a 24-ship class, is commissioned. 1944, World War II, Operation Nordwind, the last major Wehrmacht offensive on the Western Front, begins on this date. 1946, President Truman officially proclaims the end of hostilities in World War II. 1951, the Cold War. Marshall Plan expires after distributing more than $13.3 billion in foreign aid to rebuild Western Europe. Now, had we taken that money and put it to work in this country, where would we be? They started the war, we didn't. 1955, General Motors becomes the first U.S. corporation to make over $1 billion in a year. 1956, the Romanian television network begins its first broadcast in Bucharest. 1961, RTE, Ireland's state broadcaster, launches its first national television service. 1963, the Central African Federation officially collapses, subsequently becoming Zambia, Malawi, and Rhodesia. 1965, Jean Bedel Bokassa, leader of the Central African Republic Army, and his military officers began a coup d'etat against the government of President David Daco. 1968, the first flight of the Tupolev Tu-144, the first civilian supersonic transport in the world, took place on this date. 1968, McRobertson Miller Airlines Flight 1750 crashes near Port Hedland in Western Australia, killing all 26 people on board. 1981, a coup d'etat in Ghana removes President Hilaire Limon's PNP government, places it with the Provisional National Defense Council led by Flight Lieutenant Jerry Rawlings. 1983, the AT&T Bell system is broken up by the U.S. government. How to teach you to raise your prices. In 1983, Benjamin Ward's appointed New York City Police Department first ever African-American police commissioner. Everybody makes such a big deal out of race. If you've got the ability, who cares what color you are? 1983, in Nigeria, a coup d'etat led by Major General Muhammadu Buhari ends the Second Nigerian Republic. 1991, all official Soviet Union institutions have ceased operations to this date, 5 days after the Soviet Union is officially dissolved. 1992, Czechoslovakia is peacefully dissolved in what is dubbed by media as the Velvet Divorce, resulting in the creation of the Czech Republic and the Slovak Republic. 1994, this date is skipped altogether in Kiribati as the Phoenix Islands and the Line Islands change time zones from UTC minus 11 to UTC plus 13, and UTC minus 10 to UTC plus 14, respectively. Thirteen, of course, in UTC is actually 1 p.m., and 1400 in UTC is actually 2 o'clock. 1994, the first Chechen War. Russian ground forces began a new year storming of Grozny. 1998, the European exchange rate mechanism freezes the value of the legacy currencies in the Eurozone and establishes the value of the euro. 1999, the first president of Russia, Boris Yeltsin, resigns from office, leaving his prime minister, Vladimir Putin, as the acting president and successor, and he has been president and successor to this day. 1999, U.S. government hands control of the Panama Canal and all the adjacent land of the canal, known as the Panama Canal Zone, to Panama. That's because he was told to do it by the bankers who were supporting his administration. They thought they could get a better deal from Omar Torrijos, who was the strong man at the time. This handover complied with the signing of the 1977 Torrijos-Carter treaties. We put a lot of money into the Panama Canal, and people had retired there, built their life there, and Jimmy Carter gave it all away. So he'd look good to the bankers. 1999, Indian Airlines Flight 814 hijacking ends after 7 days with the release of 190 survivors at Kandahar Airport in Afghanistan. On this day in 2000, the last day of the 20th century and the second millennium. In 2004, the official opening of Taipei 101, the tallest skyscraper at that time in the world. It was 1,670 feet tall. 2009, both a blue moon and a lunar eclipse occur. 2010, the tornadoes touch down in Midwestern and Southern United States, including Washington County, Arkansas, Greater St. Louis, Sunset Hills, Missouri, Illinois, and Oklahoma, with a few tornadoes in the early hours. A total of 36 tornadoes touched down, resulting in the deaths of 9 people and $113 million in damages. Get Jimmy Carter to write you a check. He's got all that money the bankers gave him for giving away the Panama Canal Zone. 2011, Samoa and Tokelau skipped the day of December 30, 2011 as they jumped to the other side of the international dateline, which, of course, changed their time zones. Also in 2011, NASA succeeds in putting the first of two gravity recovery and interior laboratory satellites into orbit around the moon. 2014, a New Year's Eve celebration stampede in Shanghai kills at least 36 and injures over almost 50 others. 2015, fire breaks out at the Downtown Address Hotel in downtown Dubai, United Arab Emirates. That's located near Burj Khalifa, 2 hours before the fireworks display is due to commence. 16 injuries were reported. One had a heart attack, another suffered a major injury, and 14 others had minor injuries. 2018, 39 people are killed after a 10-story building collapses in the industrial city of Magnitogorsk in Russia. 2019, World Health Organization is informed of cases of pneumonia with an unknown cause detected in Wuhan. This later turned out to be COVID-19, which has been the cause of the COVID-19 pandemic. Of course, our fearless leader, Sleepy Joe Biden, and the World Health Organization absolutely deny that it originated in Wuhan. We can't upset our Chinese brethren. 2020, World Health Organization issues its first emergency use validation for a COVID-19 vaccine. And even those with vaccines are getting it. Go figure. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays observances. Christian Feast Day, Pope Sylvester I in the Catholic Church. International Solidarity Day of Azerbaijanis and Azerbaijan. New Year's Eve and its related observances. First night, which takes place in the U.S.
last day of the year, or Vesperas Ng Bagong Taon, special holiday between Arousal Day and New Year's Day in the Philippines. Novigad Eve in Russia. Misoka in Japan. First day of Hogomeni, or Odd Year's Night in Scotland. 7th of the 12th days of Christmas in Western Christianity. And it's the 6th and penultimate day of Kwanzaa. All right, let's see what else we might have on this particular date. In 192, Roman Emperor Commodus survives poisoning attempt by his mistress, only to be strangled in the bath in an assassination plot. Some days you just can't win. And when your own mistress tries to poison you, that's not good. In 765, the coffin of Ho Si Sin Hui interred in a stupa built in China. In 1492, 100,000 Jews are expelled from Sicily, and I've yet to see a reason for all this anti-Jewish behavior. 1604, Admiral Stephen Vanderhagen's fleet reaches Bantam. 1621, Hungarian King Bethlen Gabor and Holy Roman Emperor Ferdinand II signed the Treaty of Mikulov. 1687, the first Huguenots depart France to Cape of Good Hope. 1688, forces pro James II, Earl of Devonshire, occupy Nottingham. 1695, the famous window tax is imposed in England. It causes a lot of shopkeepers to break up their windows to avoid paying the tax. You know, when you've got to stoop to something like that to get, raise money, something's wrong. 1711, John Churchill, first Duke of Marlborough, was fired as the English Army commander. 1744, English astronomer James Bradley announces his discovery of Earth's nutation motion. That's the wobble, don't you know? Yes, the planet wobbles. That's why you may have trouble walking straight sometimes. 1756, Russia joins the Alliance of Versailles. 1758, the British Expeditionary Army occupies Gori, or Dakar, in Senegal. 1776, Rhode Island establishes wage and price controls to curb inflation. The limit is 70 cents a day for carpenters and 42 cents a day for tailors. Don't say how much candlestick makers get. 1779, the British fleet beat the Dutch merchant vessels. 1781, the first U.S. bank opens. It's called the Bank of North America. 1783, the import of African slaves is banned by all the northern states. 1841, Alabama becomes the first state to license dental surgeons. 1862, the skirmish at Parker Crossroads in Tennessee takes place. 1862, the Union ironclad ship the Monitor, which famously fought the Merrimack in Hampton Roads, sank off Cape Hatteras in North Carolina. 1870, J.D. Snelter patents the rocket mail in France. Now, he had a patent, but it was never done. It wasn't practical. 1879, the cornerstone laid for Honolulu's Iolani Palace. That's the only royal palace in the U.S. if you discount the White House. 1879, Gilbert and Sullivan's comic opera, The Pirates of Penzance, premieres in New York City. On this day in 1879, was Brooklyn's last day as an independent city. It was incorporated in New York City, January 1st, 1898. In 1906, the French, the British, and the Italians signed a treaty concerning the rights in Abyssinia. That's Ethiopia, don't you know? In 1910, U.S. tobacco industry produced 9 billion cigarettes in 1910. When I was growing up, you could get a pack of, I think it was 30, cost you 45 cents. Now that same pack, and it's not 30 anymore, is, as of this morning, I saw a sign for $6.50. Alrighty. 1921, the last San Francisco fire horses were retired. They pulled the fire engines. In 1924, Italian fascist Mussolini orders the suppression of opposition newspapers. If you don't like what's being said about you in the newspaper, put them out of business. 1930, U.S. tobacco industry produced 123 billion cigarettes. In 1934, Helen Ritchie becomes the first woman to pilot an airmail transport. 1935, Charles Darrow patents the board game Monopoly. He became the first millionaire game designer. 1938, Dr. R.N. Harger's Drunk-O-Meter, the first breath test that could be done on the side of the road, was introduced in Indiana. 1942, on this date, was the Battle of the Barents Sea between the British Navy and the German Kriegsmarine off Cape North Cape, Norway. 1944, the Japanese Army evacuates Harbor City, Akiab. Also on this day in 1944, Hungary declares war on Germany. 1945, ratification of the United Nations Charter is completed. 1946, French troops leave Lebanon. And on this day in 1946, as I said, Truman officially proclaimed the end of World War II. Well, this day in 1958, Cuban dictator Fulgencio Batista notifies his cabinet he's getting the hell out of Dodge. Castro came in and took over. And I think that pretty much has it. You know, we've been talking about all kinds of strange things. You know, there have been so many stories that I have told about haunted locations. You know, in Santa Fe, New Mexico, there's the La Fonda Hotel. Founded in 1607. Well, when Santa Fe was founded in 1607, official records show an inn, or Fonda as it was called, was among the first businesses established. Born 20 years later in 1821, when Captain William Becknell completed the first successful trading expedition from Missouri to Santa Fe, he stayed at the La Fonda. That's where the Santa Fe Trail terminated in the city's central plaza. And the path or route that Captain Becknell followed became known as the Santa Fe Trail. Now, the current building was built in 1922 on the site of the previous inns. 1925, it was acquired by the Atchison, Topeka, Santa Fe Railroad, which leased it to Fred Harvey, who operated what were known as Harvey Houses. In fact, he became quite well known for having what were called Harvey Houses at all the different depots. For more than 40 years, from 1926 to 1968, La Fonda was one of the more successful Harvey Houses, which became a very well-known chain of fine hotels. Now, in 1968, it was acquired locally, and it's been locally owned and operated and provided service and hospitality and modern amenities while maintaining historic integrity. Now, the present La Plazula dining room in this old hotel is originally an enclosed courtyard that was situated around an old well. Now, over 100 years ago, during the period of time in which a casino operated in that building, a salesman who had a streak of bad luck and lost all his company's money got up from the gambling tables, walked into the courtyard, and jumped into the old well. Now, from time to time, guests in the dining room report seeing a man walk to the center of the room and jump as if into an invisible hole and simply vanish. Of course, the well has been sealed up and built over. Now, the building is old. It was already built when the city of Santa Fe was founded in the early 1600s. At one point, court was held in the building, and the public hangings of those found guilty took place in the lobby, which is definitely something to keep in mind on dark, stormy nights, especially around Halloween. And besides the hangings, there were plenty of other documented deaths in the La Fonda. Now, 1867, La Fonda was known as the Exchange Hotel. Records show Judge John P. Slow was killed in the lobby by Captain Rainerson, a member of the territory legislature representing Dona Ana County. Rainerson shot him in the stomach after Slow called him a liar and a thief in the ensuing trial, of course. Rainerson, who was quite popular, was acquitted. A lot of folks believe the judge still haunts the building. And in hotel archives, also document the hanging death of an individual by a lynch mob in the hotel's backyard. That would tend to definitely raise the idea of a haunting. Now, one of the more famous hauntings here in El Paso is the Hotel Paso del Norte. And that was a dream of Zach White, a native of Amherst County, Virginia, who became a successful El Paso businessman. The design of the hotel was the product of two great disasters, the burning of El Paso's Grand Central Hotel in 1892. That was a four-story structure that had been located on the site of present-day Mills Building, and the 1906 San Francisco earthquake. Now, Zach White had been one of those who had helped to try to put out the fire at the Grand Central Hotel. A lot of folks in the crowd tried to rescue those who couldn't get out because someone had actually chained the fire exit shut. And he decided at the time that in 1906, there was absolutely no reason that you couldn't build a fireproof hotel. He also designed what became known as the Hotel Paso del Norte to be earthquake-proof. So in case of firestorms and earthquakes, that building is the place to be. You know, after the 1906 San Francisco earthquake, Zach White and John Lewis, or excuse me, J.E. Lewis, an engineer, copied the foundation plans and the design features of the buildings that had survived the quake and the fire. These earthquake-proof features, coupled with a fireproof design, were incorporated into the Hotel Paso del Norte, translated as the Hotel on the Pass to the North, which opened to guests in December 1912. Now, of course, the Paso del Norte wasn't White's only contribution to El Paso. He also was involved in the building of the first Santa Fe Street International Bridge, which was replaced by the Paso del Norte Bridge in 1967. He also helped build the first brick plant in El Paso, as well as the first streetcar line. He was vice president of the Gas, Electric, and Power Company, and he's one of El Paso's strongest advocates for the use of electricity and gas. But he's most remembered for the building of what he called his dream hotel. Now, the Paso del Norte was built on the site formerly occupied by the Kohlberg Cigar Store and Factory. They made cigars and sold them. The Guarantee Shoe Store and the Happy Hour Theater, El Paso's best-known vaudeville house. Took 2 years for that $1.5 million building to be completed by Trost and Trost Architects and J.E. Lewis, the construction engineer. Only the finest materials were used in the construction of Mr. White's dream hotel, as he desired the hotel to be the finest constructed building in El Paso at the time and for many years to come. The 10-story structure was built of steel and concrete in an earthquake-proof foundation with a brick exterior and terracotta trim. The inside partitions and the walls are made from what were termed fireproof white gypsum from nearby White Sands. Now, the lobby itself was designed with meticulous attention to detail. Mr. White had Italian artisans brought to El Paso to do the work he wanted. Tiffany's of New York specifically designed and built the golden Tiffany stained glass dome with its elaborate mahogany carvings that graces the lobby of this old hotel. That dome is actually made up of 17 pieces and is suspended by wires due to the tremendous weight. Otherwise, it would have collapsed in the center. The dome bar chandeliers are unique in their design. During one of the renovations of the hotel, these European chandeliers were installed to light the lobby. The electrically lit fixtures were among the first electrical lights in the area. The chandeliers in the dome restaurant, which are originally called the Depot, are replicas of the original candle chandeliers that were lowered in the evening for the candles to be lit and raised back up to their normal height. There are actually three lobbies in the original design, each decorated with cherry stone, green and gold scagliola, lit by European chandeliers and trimmed with black serpentine marble. It was truly the finest hotel of its type in the country. And this show place opened Thanksgiving Day in 1912. With a very lavish ball. Now, the official grand opening for guests was in December. Over the years, the rooftop ballroom and patio were the scenes of a lot of dinner dances and Sunday tea dances. It was also the preferred gathering place for those who wanted to watch the progress of Pancho Villa's forces across the river in Juarez during the Mexican Revolution. Later became the center of the cattle industry, with more cattle being bought and sold in the lobby of this hotel than any other single location in the world. Well, this old hotel remained in the White family until 1970 when TGK Investment Company bought the structure from Mary and Catherine White, the daughters of Zach White. Been a number of renovations and remodelings of the Paso del Norte. The most recent was just finished three months ago. Prior to that, the biggest renovation was the addition of the 17-story tower in 1986. Now, Zach White had as his goal the building of the most modern hotel in the Southwest. On December 19, 1912, he had a huge oil storage tank installed in the Paso del Norte on the grounds. The tank, built by the El Paso Foundry, was 8 feet in diameter and 62 feet long. It was built to hold 12,100 gallons of oil to be used for heating the hotel. The plan was for the tank to be filled directly from railroad tank cars on the GH and SA tracks through a pipeline built directly to the hotel. Now, the original hotel used coal to fire the boilers that provided steam heat to the rooms. and the coal to be collected in rail cars and dumped on the yard adjacent to the property. 1915, the Paso del Norte built a coal bin underneath the hotel in which the coal would be placed instead of leaving it out in the weather. Interestingly enough, the coal bin was built next to the hotel bakery, which I'm sure gave it a unique taste. The original design of the hotel didn't have closets in the rooms. Instead, guests would use cloakrooms with hooks mounted on the walls to hold their clothing. Now, this was done because in those days, most travelers would carry their clothing rolled up in large carpet bags. When a traveler got to their destination, they'd unroll the garments and hang them up on hooks. Now, this is why the rooms in the old section of the hotel offer mahogany armoires instead of closets for use of the guest. Now, there's no question Zach White spared no expense in ensuring the Paso del Norte was a thoroughly modern hotel. Another unusual feature of this magnificent hotel was installing in the basement of tiled hot tubs and bathing areas for use by the guest. In the early part of the 1900s, it was thought to be detrimental to your health to routinely take baths, but such is the heat in the Southwest that it became standard. Now, I'm aware Mr. White had no plans for his hotel to become a haven for the rest of the spirits of those who've not yet gone on to where it is that the dead go, but almost from the first, guests, employees, and staff have seen and heard things that are beyond the ordinary and the expected. I've been told that some people refuse to stay in the old sections of the hotel due to these unusual occurrences. Now, I've attended a lot of events in this historic old hotel. Naturally, in idle discussion with other attendees, conversations often turn to the stories associated with the hotel. That's where I first heard that a young woman wearing a long white dress has been seen in the basement of the hotel by members of the staff. Now, according to the story associated with this ghost girl, she had gotten herself in what was known as the family way, and it was agreed that she and her young man would get married. Now, both families were prominent in the community, so arrangements were made for this wedding to be the event of the season. Going to take place on the 10th floor of the hotel. One of the first events to take place at the newly completed Hotel Paso del Norte. Everybody looked forward to it, especially the pregnant girl. When the big day arrived, everybody was at the hotel waiting for the ceremony to start, except the groom and one bridesmaid. He never showed up, was never seen again anywhere. Mortified and depressed being left at the altar, the young would-be bride jumped from one of the 10th-floor windows. It said that her spirit comes back looking for her young man. I actually met her in the elevator, and she looked real to me. On that particular event, I was doing a ghost tour, and I knew a wedding was going on, and I got on the elevator, and I met a young lady who was absolutely stunning. Hispanic young lady. Beautiful. Long, dark hair. And making conversation, I said, it's not too late to run. And she smiled and said, no, yes, it is. Well, the way I did my tour, we would go to one of the rooms and I would tell stories. And then we'd go out to the street for the walking tour. And after I finished telling my stories, we got on the elevator to go back down. And when I got to the lobby, the head of security, who I knew, introduced me to the bride. And it was a tall, blonde girl. And I said, I met the other one. She said, what other one? There's no other bride here but me. I wouldn't allow another bride on my wedding day. I said, well, I met her an hour or so ago in the elevator. And when I finished describing her, the head of security looked kind of strange. And he said, well, you just described the ghost girl. Now, in the mezzanine, it said that sometimes, usually late at night and early hours of a new day, members of the cleaning crew will see a door where there's not been a door before, or where there's not supposed to be a door. When you get close to that mysterious door and listen, you can hear the sound of a party clearly coming from behind the door. So far, nobody has opened that door to see what's going on or who's at that party. Rather, those who say they've seen the mysterious door have gone to get somebody else to witness it or the bizarre situation. When they come back, the door and the sounds emanating from behind it have vanished. They find only a blank wall where they saw that door very clearly a short time before. Maybe one day somebody will have the courage to open the door and see just who's at the party. Now, Zach White's original Hotel Paso del Norte has been added on to a number of times over the years. The current entrance registration desk is part of the new addition. 1986, the Dome Bar was built directly beneath the exquisite Tiffany Dome, for which the hotel is so well known. They took part of the lobby and turned it into the bar. Because originally, where the bar stands was where the original registration desk stood, and you could get to it from two different directions. As a result of this conversion, the original entrance to the hotel opens directly into the Dome Bar and is rarely used. Note that the expansion to the original hotel resulted in the demolishing of the L&A Theater. That was a historic old theater being built in 1918 by J.M. Lewis and Victor Andreas at the cost of almost $95,000. L&A opened a great fanfare November 10, 1918, with a seating capacity of 940, which was considered phenomenal. Now, many came to the L&A just to see the unbelievably ornate facade. Two owners had spared no expense in trying to outdo all the other similar enterprises in the city. There was a recessed arch over the marquee that enclosed a glazed tile mural featuring three muses from Greek mythology and two paired couples dressed in Roman clothing. Tree foliage formed the foreground under the arch, and a Renaissance landscape in the background completed the eye-catching mural. Figures in the foreground were in embossed relief. The glazed tiles were large, about 24 inches, and the entire arch was about 25 feet long. About 4 feet below the cornice of the building were busts of J.M. Lewis and Victor Andreas. Unfortunately, in the 1983 expansion of the Hotel Paso del Norte, this beautiful old building was demolished, the land being used to expand the hotel. Now, there's another entrance into what used to be the original Hotel Paso del Norte bar. It's now called Uptown's. You get there from San Antonio Street, and that door is almost always locked. As a result, this historic old bar, which sometimes is open for parties and political events, is seldom used. Now, at one event my wife and I attended at that hotel, which is now called the Camino Real, at least up until this recent renovation when it was changed back to Hotel Paso del Norte. We were early and the doors to the ballroom on the mezzanine where the event was to be held were still locked so the staff could finish setting up the room. So we went to the Dome Bar to wait until the ballroom would be open. While we were sitting there, I idly asked the cocktail waitress about a story I'd heard of people walking out of walls in the lobby. She smiled for a moment, looked around the lobby, make sure nobody was around. So she balanced her tray against one hip and proceeded to tell us the most interesting story. She said, "Well, I heard there was a mural on the wall showing a group of people standing around a piano. Now, I'd never really noticed that mural before. But I have two friends who tell me they've seen the mural the young lady's referring to." She said, "One night, one of the night managers was checking the bar, comparing sales against stock levels, things like that. And he began to feel something was wrong when he glanced up to see a woman walk out of the mural and stop in the middle of the floor. Now, he described her as young and slim and attractive, dressed in clothing from years ago and wearing one of those big hats that had flowers on it. She looked around the room like she was confused or lost and never seemed to notice the night manager who was standing only a few feet away. So he went around the bar and started toward her, and when he did, she backed up right into that mural and vanished. Well, he ran over to where she disappeared and ran his hands over the wall, and there was no place she could have gone. At that point, he suddenly remembered something he had to do elsewhere and left the bar. He was found the next morning sitting outside on a bench. He quit his job. I asked if that young lady had ever been seen again. The young lady said it was rumored some of the housekeeping staff had seen her once or twice walk out of the mural, but at that point, they rarely stayed to see what she did. Only one worker, she said, had quit after seeing some of the things that happened in the hotel. Now, she said she hadn't personally witnessed anything, but she heard a lot of stories that made her a little afraid to work the night shift at the bar. Well, when I decided to see if I could verify any of the stories, I went to the hotel and asked to talk to the manager. I was directed to a very attractive young lady by the name of Michelle Cape, director of sales. And she took time out of her schedule to tell me some of the stories she'd heard since coming to work at the Camino Real. Now, frankly, I expected a blanket denial that there were any ghosts at the Camino, but she was very frank. She said she'd heard folklore concerning two prominent spirits who appeared from time to time. Of course, the best known, she said, was the young woman in a white gown, and she confirmed that that young lady was to be married at the hotel in Paso del Norte, but something happened, and she now alternates between haunting the parking garage and the 10th floor. I asked if she had any idea of the name of the ghost, and she said it was rumored to be Catherine White, the daughter of Zach White. I don't think that, since she was involved in the sale of the Camino, I don't think that's probably correct, but certainly it could well have been a White relative. The other spirit that seemed to freak at the hotel is a well-dressed man who wears a black suit cut in the style of the 19th century and wears a bowler hat. Now, he's been seen a number of times, and it's rumored to be he's Ben Dowell, a Kentuckian who became El Paso's first mayor. She said supporting that idea is the fact that Ben Dowell's home and saloon stood at 115 Southeast El Paso Street, the spot where the Hotel Paso del Norte's original bar was built. I asked for examples of his appearances, and she said she had heard from housekeeping that he has a habit of appearing in closets and other odd places, scaring the daylights out of the housekeeper that comes up on him unexpectedly. I asked about the stories I'd heard about doors suddenly appearing on the mezzanine level, and she said she'd heard from housekeeping that unexplained doors and stairways have appeared at various locations throughout the hotel where there may once have been a door or stairway that doesn't exist today. She had heard the story I told her about the party going on behind one of the closed doors. I then asked about the mural around the dome bar where the lady allegedly walked on the wall, and she said she knew of a large photograph, but not a mural in the bar area. She said there was a faded artwork in what was the 10th floor ballroom, but she couldn't think of any murals in the lobby area. I asked about seeing the artwork in the ballroom. She said it was no longer open to the public, as it was now what was then the original ballroom is now an engineering room. And talking of the engineering department reminded her of a story that a friend had told her. She said there was a man she knew well who had worked in the engineering department. He'd been in a dome bar one day when a man in a bowler hat came into the bar and sat down beside him. A friend said they had a very nice conversation of some length. He seriously thought he was going to talk to a hotel guest till the man in the bowler hat had gotten up from his seat, put on his hat, walked into a corner near the bar, and just vanished from sight. And she was certain her friend was a credible witness. I asked about other stories she'd heard since joining the staff. She said most of them dealt with occurrences on the 10th floor and the lobby, though, as she mentioned earlier, the housekeeper's talk of the man in the bowler hat appearing in various places around the hotel. And, you know, in retrospect, it's not a wild notion to think that the Camino, the Hotel Paso del Norte, or the Camino, as it's called by its current name, could or would be haunted. Much life and death in El Paso is, over the almost 100 years the hotel that stood there had been associated with this imposing structure. Due to its location, the Hotel Paso del Norte was the virtual center of life in early El Paso. There was a reenactment done in 1966 of an April 14th, 1881 event that gained fame as the four men shot dead in 5 seconds. This was a shootout that took place in front of the Hotel Paso del Norte. In this confrontation, Dallas Studemeyer, the newly appointed city marshal, was called on to deal with the murder of a former Texas Ranger named Crimp Kyle by the Johnny Hale, manager of the Manning's Ranch, and a man on trial already for the murder of two Mexicans. Some of the testimony at the trial had been in Spanish, and Crimp Kyle had acted as a translator for the court. Hale didn't like what was said and chose to accost Crimp Kyle during the noon recess with a hidden gun that had been smuggled to him by friends. In his famous shootout, Johnny Hale killed Krempkow. Studemeyer pulled his weapons and shot at Hale, but missed and hit a man named Lopez, an innocent bystander. Then he fired again and killed Hale. George Campbell, ex-city marshal, an enemy of Studemeyer, chose to draw on the marshal. He fired and missed. Studemeyer killed Campbell. Of such confused events, legends are made, and the death of an innocent man is forgotten. Well, Miss Cape graciously allowed me to wander around the hotel and talk to some of the staff. One very cute young lady named Rosemary Corgoy, working at the front desk, had a story about a guest staying on the 16th floor. Now, there was a presidential suite on the 17th floor. She was working the graveyard shift one night, and the guest called to complain about the noisy party and the loud piano music coming from the presidential suite. It was keeping him awake. So she sent security to the presidential suite, but it was empty. No party. Nobody's playing the grand piano in the presidential suite. But at the same time, in the room below, the sounds of the party could still be heard. Something was going on. I talked to Robert Diaz, the director of security for the hotel. He related two incidents that he had been involved in during his time on the job. A new manager had been transferred to the Camino and was living at the in the hotel while looking for a house. One afternoon, she and her daughter went to the pool on the 10th floor. It's a very nice pool. When she arrived at the pool, she saw somebody she thought was suspicious. The lady appeared to be extremely angry. She stood outside the only door to the pool area and called down the security. Two officers were immediately dispatched to check out this lady. When they got there, there was nobody in the pool area. Assuming she might have gotten out and left by way of the stairs, they checked the stairs all the way to the street level and never found anybody. The thing is, she couldn't have gotten by the manager who was waiting outside the door to the pool. The other incident happened during the construction of the new floors. It was night security furnished by the contractor to make sure the tools were safe. One night, he was called by hotel security personnel at home and told the security furnished by the contractor had run off the job, and one man had kept running when he hit the street. They couldn't find that particular man who'd been the one to actually spark what became a full-blown panic. Finally, the guard that had disappeared was found at his house and questioned. He said his job had been to provide security for the 17th floor. This is when they were building the tower. He said he'd been warned not to shut the doors along the halls. It had all been just painted, and it was feared they'd stick. And a painted door that sticks takes damn near dynamite to get open. Workers' tools were stored in several rooms, so he was to just sit in the hallway and make sure nobody got into the room, stole any of the tools, and make sure the door stayed open, of course. He said he'd been sitting by a window reading a book, and one of the doors being held open by a doorstop suddenly slammed shut. Said he got up, opened that door, and replaced the doorstop, went back to his book. A few minutes, he glanced up to see the doorstop from one of the doors slide across the floor, and that door slammed shut. Curious, thinking a friend might be playing a joke on him, he reopened that door, replaced the doorstop, and searched the entire floor. Didn't find anybody. So he went back to his book, and I was peaceful for a few minutes, and then in unison, every single door slammed shut. At that point, he knew something was out of whack. He panicked and ran screaming down the stairs. Well, as he passed the landing of the 16th floor, the guard on that floor heard him, and he started running down the stairs behind him, and the guard on the 15th also started to run behind them. All anybody knew for sure was they were getting out of that building. In another incident that seemed during the construction in the 1990s, a crane fell from the roof. And when El Paso gets an unbelievable winds, and one of the cables holding the crane snapped and wrapped around a worker and took him off the roof with the crane. They crashed on the roof of the third floor, which kind of sticks out. Only way to get the dead worker off the roof of the third floor was to take him through one of the guest rooms or just roll him over the edge because he ain't going to feel any more pain. Well, from that time, nobody wants to stay in the room where they took the worker out. From time to time, those in the offices in that part of the third floor where the crane crashed will hear something slam into the roof above them. There's a lot of interesting stories about the Camino Real. In fact, the cover of the book, and it's called Haunted Hotels, and I wrote you can get it on Amazon. shows a ghost girl walking down the hall, and she's carrying a Barbie doll in her hand. Well, it looks like a Barbie doll in her hand. She's a young lady who died in a hotel in the early part of the 1900s. And on the day of the dead one year, workers who knew about her put up a little memorial, and they put a doll on it. When they came back to dismantle the altar, the doll was gone. And of course, everyone assumed somebody else had taken it. But they never did find what happened to it. Well, the doll the young lady was photographed carrying down the hall is the one that was put on the little altar. The ghost girl got it. And this photograph was taken by a manager who called me and told me about it, and he emailed it to me. And it is quite, actually, makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up. Well, another haunted building in El Paso is the Cortez Building, located in the northeast corner of North Mason and Mills Avenue. It's an 11-story building that began its life as the Hotel Vendome, El Paso's very first hotel. It takes the shape of a L-shaped block about the second story. 12 bays face Mason, 10 bays face Mill Street. And while this building was never ranked as one of Trost's more artistic designs, it did incorporate one original feature not found in any of the buildings of that period. Peering out of the roundels above the Mesa Street entrance is a series of portrait heads of conquistadors. Now, this hotel cost about $1.5 million for Alzina Orndorff de Groff, a hotel operator from Tucson who had moved into El Paso to erect. It was called the Hotel Orndorff, third hotel to bear that name and a second Orndorff hotel to occupy that same spot of land. It had been said between the cost of the building, the hotel, and the rich furnishings, Alzina Orndorff de Groff spent over $6 million, which was an unheard of sum for that time. 1 week before the opening of the Grand Orndorff Hotel in 1926, she got caught in a freak rainstorm, came down with pneumonia, and died before the grand opening. Now, she had been looking forward to it. Said by somebody, she still watches over her dream hotel. And changes are certainly unwelcome in this particular hotel. Strange things happen when changes start to be made. In a lobby, workers are maintained they feel the presence of others even when they're alone, and most feel that these presences come and go up and down the stairs. There have been reports of reflections of people being seen in the gleaming metalwork of the elevators who are not in the elevators. A psychic I knew by the name of Connie Wang used to go through the building from the El Paso Ghost Tour and was very friendly with the security guard. One day she saw him walk past her without speaking and round the corner in one of the halls. She thought maybe she'd offended him and followed him to see what the problem was. So she went after him and never did find him. Only later she found out he hadn't been at work that day. He was home ill. So who or what had been she been following? Well, on this note, we've run out of time for today's show and for the year. We'll be back on January 3rd, 2022. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening, weekend, and year.